First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Doubter 5, or Larry Rhodes. We're recording this on Sunday morning, July 9th, 2023. And as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
It's the tag team duo, the OGs, Doubter 5 and the Wombat.
The dynamic duo. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. I'd bet anything. In Knoxville, in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of over 1,000 of us. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about them after the mid-show break. So be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
What are we? Just in your entertainment? That's the conditions. If I'm a little bit slower today, forgive me. I got a little bit of a head cold. But the idea is, I'd like to talk about how do you stay entertained in heaven? And I actually found a really interesting scenario that would both explain how we are entertained, but also neatly and perfectly to the point where even Larry will be convinced that souls exist, how to explain away the problem of evil. We'll also be talking about North Korea, how God's a bully, and the whole controversy behind being told bless you as an atheist. It's not as big as you think, but before we get into it, let's touch bases with ourselves. I know for a fact that I'm a little under the weather today. Not sure why, probably because of how hot it was, and I'm just a little bit exhausted. I don't feel like I have any particular symptoms, but it's been really, really hot recently, and we've been getting a lot of weird storms too. So my body's having a hard time trying to figure out, is it dry? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it rainy? Is it what's going on? When can I go outside? When should I not go outside? Because I can step out right now when it's sunny, and I know potentially in a half hour, it could be tormenting storms left and right through the neighborhood. So it's enough to keep me indoors for a while, and I could use the rest. Yeah. Larry, how you been holding up?
I've been fine, but you know, it's summer, and in summer, you get those heat storms in the evening, and they're pop-ups.
Storms.
Yeah, so you really don't know when they're going to pop up. I tried to ride my bike yesterday, but I went out and the battery was dead.
Oh, no.
I left my little thing hooked up to it and it drained the battery, but I should be able to go again tomorrow. Oh, yeah, I got news for you, though. I tried a new game.
Okay. What do you got?
Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, the first one? Okay. So you're playing Horizon Zero Dawn. Okay. Yeah. I recommended that game to you a while back.
And
I
did. That's one of the reasons I got it. And
I'm playing thoroughly, it right now?
Thoroughly enjoying it.
Awesome.
At this moment, no, okay. But I have been playing it this morning.
Okay, so talk to me about where you are. Have you just started the game? Like, what's
no? I've got to where I can tame the horses, and I've gone through the trials. And
you've gone through the trials.
I'm level 10.
Yeah. You got some. Man, I'm so happy because you know I try to tell people like this is a quality game.
It is,
and most people don't realize it until they get their hands on it. It's one of those games where you can't explain it, but you can give the game and be like 5 seconds, they'll understand, oh, this is a good game. I'm going to play it from beginning to end.
Yeah,
but
got a good story. That's an important thing.
Right. You're like, it's cavemen. You're kind of like a caveman and you're like getting resources. Oh, so it's like a resource management game where you don't have no technology. And it's like, no. But you also have sci-fi stuff too. And there are robots. So it's a sci-fi game where you just program computers all day. It's like, no. It's both of those put together and they have no idea how that works. And you're like, you just have to play the game.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. You're going to have a really fun time with that game. I guarantee it.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm really happy to hear that too. Single player adventures. You've been playing a lot of multiplayer games too. The only issue with those is they tend to rely on the interactions with other people.
And so when we all know how how solid those can be, how positive.
Yeah, it paints the sort of gamer I am, but to have a catered single player experience where you can just feel your power curve and people programmed respond to that and the empowerment that that feels and the challenges that are catered just for, we expect only one person to do this. It'll be hard, but you can do it by your own. That's such a great experience to have. There'll be a part of the game where you have to go to another area of the map and you start to realize how big the world is. And you think, oh my gosh, I thought I was playing this game for like this much. Now it's like, oh, this is fun. Cause now I can actually explore. It's going to be really, really great.
Yeah.
So I remember playing that game overnight. When that game dropped for PC, I was so happy because I thought it would only be on PlayStation. And now that's on PC, I was so happy.
Right.
But that's a great way to stay entertained. Wouldn't you agree, Larry?
Oh, yeah. Especially when you're 73 years old. Yeah. Now, I used to dance, do karate, do all kinds of things, but my knees are blown.
Oh, no. Okay.
My hips and all. But I can play games, so I do.
Nice. Yeah, we can make virtual hip dancing for you. Don't worry, though. In heaven, you'll have all the knees and hips support that you'll have. But you'll also have what, in my opinion, would be is the best entertainment in the world. This entertainment is being able to. And now, before we have the Christians jump on, I'm just saying this is a tongue-in-cheek explanation for describing why we have evil. What's the issue with evil? And I have this interesting idea based on a conversation I've had. So it's not entirely my idea, but heaven is forever, but heaven can also potentially be boring in some senses. Why? Because you don't have any sort of entertainment. And so but you can't have a boring heaven. So what kind of entertainment exists in heaven to keep you entertained? Right. And I thought, what better entertainment than to be able to like look into the lives of people? Like you have a big screen TV and you just have a channel and every person's life is a channel. Right. So you have a billion channels, billions and billions of channels. Anytime you want to, you can flip a button, turn on your TV, flip your channels and go into the life of someone who's living a life right now on Earth.
Yeah, that's a common trope among Christians, too, that, you know, your parents are looking down on you at any particular time. Your grandmother or whatever is watching you. So be good.
Yes. It's looking over your grandbabies, looking over your great, great grandchildren, make sure everyone's right. Speaking up, being their little ghost helpers, or tell them, hey, don't go down that path. You can have some interaction buttons if your points are high.
Yeah, you've got a million channels up there. 7 billion channels, I guess.
That's so many channels.
And some of them are X-rated.
Oh, no. Yeah. There's that, too. Maybe not in heaven. Maybe that's the other place that we're thinking about. But I would say this. You can interact, but you can mostly just watch. And so if you want to experience someone winning the lottery, you can flip to the channel. You can flip to the lottery channel and just nonstop get the delight of people scratching that ticket and finding that they have the winning numbers. And you feel so good because they feel so good. And they're like, wow, this is great. I'm getting the same experience they had. This is amazing. So you can get those wonderful experiences, baby showers, people proposing, getting accepted to going to a wedding, promotions, lotteries, as I said before, graduating. But you can also get some of the more terrible stuff too. Say you get tired of all the good stuff happening and you need to like spice it up a bit. Maybe you want to see what's it like to get shot and you flip to the purple getting shot channel. Or what's it like to be homeless living under a bridge? And you can flip to the people living under a bridge channel and be like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. I need some drama. I need some suspense. Can you give me the channel where someone's running from their lives through an alley with a gang of people trying to chase them down and beat them to death with a melee weapon? And I'll just change the channel just before it happens. All the suffering on earth is for a purpose. And the purpose is to entertain the people in heaven so they can have something to watch and have fun with. And you might say, Larry, I know what you're saying. You're scoffing because you say, that's terrible. I was like, no, because you're going to be in heaven forever. Think about that. It's infinity. It's an infinite symbol over a temporary period of time.
Well, here's temporary period of time. Let's talk about the infinity of heaven.
Infinity now. Divided by zero is still infinity. It's still a lot.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. How long is 5 billion years to infinity?
I'm sorry. What's up?
How long is 5 billion years to infinity?
Infinity. You said from 5 billion to infinity?
How do you, when you compare 5 billion years to infinity, how much is that?
It's an infinite difference.
is a tiny, tiny, tiny speck of time compared to infinity, right?
Absolutely.
Well, in 5 billion years, our sun is going to swell up to such size it'll kill all the humans on Earth and everything else, by the way.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do after that?
We'll have to get
all our channels go blank.
We'll have Netflix. We'll have Hulu. We'll have all those episodes.
All of history that we can go back through and watch individual lives.
It's all replays. Yeah. It's all replays. It's all, we're good. Yeah. The classics. We'll have all the Seinfelds. We'll have all
at the end of elements. At the end of infinity, if it never gets close to it, then everything will be replays and classics and old. Because you've replayed them a million times.
But you have 5 billion. You have 5 billion years of replays. Think about that. There's still people meeting for Star Trek conventions from off the first season. Like, you're going to have your fandoms. You're going to have your groups. You're going to be playoff games. That's how you keep people entertained. If it really gets that bad,
How entertaining would some peon's life if I'm like the middle of the Dark Ages be?
I don't know. Why are you getting upset? This is for you. This is for your entertainment. Larry,
I'm just saying it's not very, it's the value of that particular entertainment wouldn't last very long, I guess. That's what I was saying compared to infinity.
I hear what you're saying. Compared to infinity, I hear what you're saying. You're saying there's literally nothing I can do.
What are you going to do unique for your three trillionth birthday? And after you learn to master every instrument that was ever invented,
Right. It's a lot. We'd all basically become bored gods at the end of the day. Maybe we'd start our own wars, our own planets, or something like that. Maybe the Mormons were right. Is that what you're saying? The Mormons were right all along?
If we all become gods, then it'd be kind of like a Greek tragedy, wouldn't it? We'd all find planets to govern and set people against each other.
Just for our entertainment.
Yeah.
Right. So the problem with me on that, and yeah, you have a right. You have a point. There's nothing I can do for an infinite amount of time that would ever keep me entertained, even if it was vastly varied, because I'm going to exhaust it all. My brain needs new things to stay entertained. That's just how we are. We like novelty and we like to grow, right? At least we should. I could definitely imagine if you were to take that aspect away from me, then we're not talking about me anymore. We're talking about some sort of programmed brain in a vat that's no longer Tyrone. And if that's what my soul is and that's put to heaven, that's great, but that's not me. That's what I care about. And so if I go to heaven, I want to be exposed to novel stuff. I want to learn new things. And if I'm here for an infinite amount of time, I will eventually run out of stuff. It just is by factor of how things are.
And we haven't even considered the alternative.
What's up?
Not going to heaven.
Ha ha ha. Yeah. So
and eternity there.
Yeah, that sucks.
I mean, what could a person possibly do that would warrant being burned for eternity? I mean, even Hitler, with all the people that he killed, if you took all the people he killed and added up all the lives that he robbed them of, would not approach eternity. You know, 7 million dead or 8 million dead, you know, times what they live 50 years after, you know, it's only so much amount of time. He should at least be out or good after, say, 1 million years of
so it's like
torture.
Infinite punishment for a finite crime is.
And most people, according to the religious, go to hell for not believing as the religious believe. Is that worthy of eternal torture?
Right.
I mean, there's no fairness there. And God is supposed to be loving. A loving God is more merciful than just fair.
And maybe
there's so much contradictions there.
Right. And perhaps a highlight to just for not believing in a God that refuses to make themselves explicitly clear to you, that could be justification for internal punishment.
Right. And getting back to your original question, you mentioned 5 minutes ago, was where did evil come from?
Oh, where did evil come from?
According to the Bible, Isaiah 45:7.
From atheists. What?
No. Isaiah 45:7 in King James Version, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. That's just one verse. There's no out of context or anything. It's all in one verse.
I made everything. Right.
Yep.
So you've made sin, you made the devil. When you are the arbiter of the rules and how to break them and create the vices that make us break them. It's sort of like, and it throws me back to like just square one. A lot of things that are sinful, that are explicitly sinful in the Bible, don't have to exist, yet God makes them exist. And that goes from shellfish to fabrics of mixed cloth to even formats of sex with body parts that seem to perfectly fit each other, right? Why makes round pegs for round holes if that was the most blasphemous thing that you could do? There's so many other different kinds of designs for things we could have had. You could have had a pollinating system. You could have had a right angle turn. There's so many things you could have done, but yet you made it so easy and then said, by the way, that's super, super bad. And if you do it, that's bad. It's like, then why'd you make gay people? Like, if gay people's bad, why'd you make gay people? If shellfish is bad, why'd you make shellfish?
And it doesn't matter in the end. I mean, if you read the Bible and, they tell you all these things you shouldn't do. But when it comes right down to it, what will send you to hell? Not accepting Jesus as your savior. That's exactly the one thing that will send you to hell.
And why don't you just give us knowledge? And
if no matter what else you do, if you accept him as your savior, you go to heaven. It doesn't matter. Good even point. You know, the ultimate bad example, Hitler, was a Christian. He was a Catholic. And you know that before he committed suicide or was killed at the end, that he accepted
how do they know that who survived?
Yeah
I know they say that for Albert Einstein. I know, for example, they went to a senile Albert Einstein, a Catholic did, and forced him to confess his soul to God. And they used that as proof of him being Christian the entire time, like this great mind. But he never lived a life of
he had no personal God. He said so himself in his writings.
Exactly. You know, it also reminds me of like North Korea, and like you were talking about hell. You happen to know of a story of a person that was connotating atheism. So like we're talking about before, people who connotate great minds with Christianity. There are a lot of people who connotate bad things with atheism, I think, and it's somewhat misleading. And you had an example for North Korea, for example.
Yeah, I get notifications by Google, from Google, whenever there's an article that mentions atheism and enter atheists. And I got one this morning. The article was written, it said, the title of it was, My Time in the Atheist Hell of North Korea.
My Time in the Atheist Hell of North Korea.
And you know that it was written by a Christian, because they would consider anything that bad as being atheist. However, North Korea is not an atheist nation. Their president is a dead person, a god, and they call him a god. He's God, and they worship him. And his offspring are also worshipped as God, dead or alive.
Right.
They are ruled by a necroscopy.
Right. There is a supernatural dogma that comes to the belief system of the leaders of Korea. Like, it's not just, oh, these were the old presidents. No, it's like these guys walked down from a mountain, could control physics with their intent, bless fields to make them prosper and grow, protect us from foreign invaders with just their willpower alone. There's a variety of like supernatural aspects that come with that. That's not something a regular person can do.
Yeah.
And the response to that would be, well, because they're not regular people, they're super beings. And and their proof of their existence is the fact that their lineage still is here. And we pray to them and honor them on a regular basis so that we will be protected, continue to be protected by them.
So it's a religious state.
Yeah. It's a religion in its own right, honestly, that with just, you know, some modernism behind it. Because, you know, they have like a broken down version. In order to maintain a religion like that, here I put it, you have to limit the access to information that the people have.
Keep them in a bubble, information bubble.
Which is really surprising, because North Korea could learn a lot from how Americans operate. Because they'd say, wait, you believe in Jesus and you have the internet and books? Why are we working so hard when you're that gullible? Maybe we could just open up our borders, because I don't think people are as critical thinking as we originally were worried about. Right. But yeah, it's a shame. The my weird little needle to this story of an atheist hell, Larry, is that if you're an atheist, you don't follow with hell, right? So like the two terms,
you don't what?
You don't subscribe to the idea or
oh, right. of hell. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like,
and generally not the concept of the soul.
Right.
Matter.
So like I have no concept. Yeah, exactly. It's like I don't have an atheist soul. I don't have an atheist hell. There's nowhere in the world where I'd say like, oh, that's an atheist hell right there. It's just it's a misnomer that's provided from a Christian lens.
It's a boogeyman.
Yes. Yeah. It's basically a Christian putting together words of two bad things and putting them together without realizing that this is oil and water and they honestly don't mix together. And it only speaks more to the fact that when you want to find out what an atheist is, when you want to find out what atheism is all about, don't go to a Christian to figure that out. Like when someone describes anything as an atheist hell, they're likely talking about two things they have no idea about: a supernatural landscape of hell, and two, what atheism is and what it's all about. And you've probably stopped listening to this person with regard to any of those two, because they're not nearly an authority on those as they will.
It's well, one of the articles I have on my blog is called "Why Would You Go to Your Preacher for Information About Atheism?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like talking to your prison guard on an escape plan.
Yeah, I have had conversations with people who were Christians only because they were raised that way and were very adamant that they knew everything about atheism. Mm-hmm. And when I let them know I'm an atheist, they and I do it in a really friendly way. You know what it
is. Right.
They get immediately shooken up. And I'm like, hey, if you have questions about atheism, I'll happily tell you about it. It's like, no, I know everything about atheism.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that would be the equivalent of me saying, well, I know everything about Christianity because I talk to you, right? And that's not necessarily accurate.
Well, they haven't been talked to you about it at that point. They just talk to you. But yeah, they have these preconceived notions that as soon as you say you're an atheist, they are blown and they don't want to let them go. So, you know, the first time I told anybody that was not, well, I guess it was the first time I really just came out and told somebody that I was an atheist. It was a lady, and she said, oh, no, you're not.
Oh, no, you're not.
Yeah, sweetest little Southern accent you ever heard.
Yeah.
Because it conflicted with her preconceived notion of what an atheist was, because she knew me.
Right. Yeah. True.
And
not only that, but like when I started telling people that I was an atheist, I was actually surprised because I thought everyone around me was Christian. And I was shocked. I was just as shocked when I heard other people tell me, oh, I'm an atheist too. And these are people that I either liked or didn't even like. I'd be like, wait, I didn't even like you and you're an atheist? I might like you more now.
Yeah.
Like there is something about someone not believing in an imaginary being that's controlling the entire universe, even if on a personality level you don't like them, just the fact that you guys are on that same page is like, I got a lot more respect for you leaving out of this. I was like, okay, at least you're aware and with it and reasonable. Yeah. I'm gonna give you a second chance.
Yeah. No, I met a lot of those after starting the Atheist Society in Knoxville. But they generally turn out to be great people anyway.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Hey, we're at the bottom of the half hour. I want to start with before we head out, there was a comment that we got from KMPM6QE who said, ASK as an ask. I love that. So shout out to the Atheist Society at Knoxville. Cool.
Very good.
All right. Larry, take us out.
This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
husband, she's atheist, but I believe in you.
To the second half of the Digital Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, or Larry Rhodes. We're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK. It was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year now, have over 1,000 members, and we have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City, at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top table, or if it's pretty weather, outside on the deck. You can also find us online at Facebook, meetup.com, or at our website, knoxvilleatheist.org. You can also just Google Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one. That's right. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
I have a fun topic. It's one that we tend to go on tangents with normally on every show, but we just made it a little segment for it. And this one's called God's a Bully. And I'm not saying this in the sense of, man, what atheists do all day is they just think about why they hate God so much. In fact, that's the exact opposite of what we do. But it is fun when the subject of God is brought up. Why certain things that stick out to people who have a bit more of a secular mindset don't immediately stand out to those who have a Christian mindset. So like, that's why it's a fun topic of conversation. So what I want to bring up was God's a bully. And why I wanted to bring that up was, Larry, you were alluding to it earlier, the idea that you can punish someone infinitely, or even just an inordinate amount of time for crimes that range from murder, genocide, to the shellfish they eat, the people they love, the
disproportionate
clothes they
wear. The whole idea is totally disproportionate to the problem, to the crime.
Right. It's like you ate an apple that I gave to you, and that's evil. I'm punishing you, your children, your children's children, your children's children's children. It's like, when does this end? It doesn't end.
Yeah. And who's responsible for putting that apple there in the first place?
This is the first sin that we did. Exactly. Oh, that's a great name. I'm going to call that the first sin. It's like, but we literally didn't know good or bad before we even did it. The apple told us what was good or bad. It's like, true, but yeah, it's still
disobedience.
Bad. It's
like, we didn't know disobedience was wrong.
But you literally gave us a snake to tell us to eat it. Like we were not going to eat the apple until you told us where the apple was and what to do with it. Like,
well,
he's
omniscient. He knows everything. He knew what was going to happen.
Right.
So he was just laying a trap for humanity, and we fell right into it.
Right.
Innocent as we were.
It's not a trap. It's like that was the intention. Like if I bought a Lego set. I keep telling people this. If I bought a Lego set and the Lego set has a picture of a red car on it, right? It's a model red car. And I go home and I take out the pieces and I have red car pieces and I put four tires on the top of a red car piece and I have a red car piece. That's not a trap. That was the intent. That's the point. That's the whole thing.
Traps can be intentional. I mean, you put out a trap with the intention of catching.
I hear you. But there's a difference between like a chance of it not happening and me manufacturing every single step and putting it together. Like when I fabricate something by its design, that's me. I did that. I didn't trap myself. I just did something. Like I didn't trap the car the Lego pieces into becoming a car. I just made them into a car. I can't turn around and be like, "Oh, that's you. I trapped you," or like, "I got you." Oh. There's no agency.
I thought was being an example of Adam and Eve, but you're saying it's the example of being God.
Yeah. Like Adam and Eve had no agency in this sense because they had no idea of right or wrong. They had no awareness of their actions. They had no awareness of where to get these pieces. They were just things that God made and put together and said, it's now your fault. It's like, no, you did this. This is all you.
Like I like to say, he could have taken the apple tree or the fruit tree and put it on the moon. He didn't have to put it in the middle of the garden.
He could have made it 10 feet tall and just said, there's no ladders. Don't worry about it. There's so many different kinds of trees you could have made where it's just like an overhanging thing. You could have made it a rock that was 10 feet under the ground and gave them no shovels and they would never figure it out. Mm-hmm. Why make it an apple? Why make it an apple? And if it was an apple, why make it such that eating this apple will biochemically break down into better knowledge for someone's right or
wrong? And before we get a lot of mail, it's not an apple. We know it's not an apple.
We know it's a fruit. We know, but I'm just saying you could have made it something that was inedible. You could have made it like a cloud. You could have made it intangible.
Could have made it hard as a rock and they couldn't eat it.
You could have made it a scroll in a language they couldn't read. There's so many different ways you could have formatted that, but you wanted this. God wanted this to happen. When I say you're right. Like, I should be more clear. God wanted this to happen with such intentionality that you can't just turn around and be like, oh, but it was a trap for humanity. It's like, no, it was a thing that God did that he's now angry at us for no reason. Like,
and everybody that we had, every children we had all the way down the line, even though they didn't do anything.
Right. If I put gas in my car and I say, I'm going to drive to Knoxville, I'm going to go check you out later and I'm going to drive back home and my car runs out of gas, that's not a trap that I can blame my car for. That's me because I know the mileage of my car. I should know where the gas stations are. The only person to blame is me if I run out of gas. And the idea that you can blame that on people is...
It's a fairy tale. It's a mother goose. If you look at it with all the elements that we know go into fairy tales...
Yeah.
And from an outside perspective, you will see that it's a just-so story. It's why it's a story built to explain things we don't understand without the story.
And people say, well, that's the Old Testament. It shouldn't change. It's like, okay, fine. Well, you know, leaving aside the fact that God's perfect and shouldn't change, let's just take it to this level where if I have a neighbor, and let's say my neighbor loves me very, very much. He loves me so much that yesterday he took out his little son. He walked him out in front of his front yard, erected this big piece of wood and took out some hammers and just started nailing his son to this wooden stake. And I look at him, I'm like, hey, what are you doing? That your son's screaming out in pain. And he looks at me very confidently, very smugly. He's like, I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't ask you to do that. He's like, I'm doing it for you. Calm down. This is part of the plan. I'm like, you should go to jail. We should get child services over here.
Citizen's arrest.
This is citizen's arrest. This is, we're getting the ambulance. We're going to take this kid away from you and keep him away from you. You shouldn't be.
And you would. And that's like, not even, That's not even talking about Abraham and his son.
Oh, yeah. We've moved on to New Testament. We're talking strictly New Testament now. Yeah. Like I'm saying, like that story makes no sense. That is that is in any other context, you'd say, what are you doing? Why are you doing? It's like, because he loves you so much. He gave his one and only son, a part of him, you know, truly like one single body for your sins. I'm like, one, I don't care. Two, I didn't ask for that. Three, that's really terrible.
And four, we still have sin.
Four, it wasn't even that effective.
Yeah, and the whole thing about the global flood, wasn't that supposed to get rid of evil? We still got evil.
Mm. Yeah, it's a real problem. It's not an effective measure to nail your own family to crosses for the sake of other people. You know, it'd be one thing if I asked for that. You know, like a lot of the things in the Bible, particularly in the New Testament, is just a sequence of, oh, but I didn't ask for that. Thank you, though. No, thank you. And it goes from Mary's pregnancy. You know, we're talking about like Bronze Era, in a time where honor killings are still a thing. An angel going up to a lady and being like, hey, you're pregnant now. Congratulations. And the lady's like, oh, no, that's a death sentence. That's a death sentence. That's literally a death sentence. Like,
yeah, because she was not married.
I literally will need to run away from my family now. This is like not a good situation. It's like, no. Everybody's going to know that you gave birth, that you're pregnant. Everybody's going to know. It's going to be amazing. It's like, no. I don't want this. Too bad you're pregnant. It's like, oh, that's, and I'm not even married.
And you think about the personal touch. God didn't even tell her himself. He sent an errand boy to tell her, I mean.
Right. That's a terrible situation. You know, and of course, the story that I keep bringing up is there's one example of consent being accepted in the Bible. I would probably say it's the only one and the best one, where there's a supernatural being that's asking something of a human, and the human says, no, thank you. And the supernatural being is like, I respect that. See you later. And just goes away. Mm-hmm. And the only time that happens is when it's got Jesus being tried or going through trials on a mountaintop away from his followers. And
Satan
comes down to Jesus, and he's like, Jesus is up there for multiple days, and Satan's like, hey, you know, you can look at this whole town, and if you worship me, I will let everybody in that town worship you. Like, I can make that happen, and if you want to, I can even give you powers. I can do anything you want.
I believe he's talking about the entire world, wasn't
he? Yeah. I can make this really easy for you. And Jesus is like, get away from me, Satan. I don't need your help. I refuse to worship you. I will never worship you. I'm the best ever. And Jesus is, and Satan's like, okay, that's fine. I can accept that. I respect. And he goes away. There's no punishment. There's no retribution. Well,
He wasn't talking to God, though. I mean, God is the one that punishes you for refusing. You know, just how many people did the devil kill?
Exactly. In the Yeah, the death count is actually remarkably low. I don't even think there's a direct death.
Job's family. Death. And that was after God gave him permission to do it.
And God could have stopped it from happening too, honestly.
Right.
But and that was part of the bet that God was betting on that. It's like, hey, why don't we
betting human lives and stuff?
Right. Yeah. But honestly, the idea of Satan just being like, oh, that's fine. I can respect that. And he just goes away and like nothing bad happens. I always feel, and it's always hard for me to express this in a way that's meaningful, but I always feel like the Bible is written from the point of view of a tyrant writing his own autobiography, where everything that he's doing that's absolutely objectively terrible is framed as if it's actually really cool and interesting with his intent. But if you just look at it outsider test of faith, love me or I will punish you forever. Let me kill my son to absolve you of rules that I made that you broke, right? Let me drown all the babies on earth so I can do a fresh restart, even though.
But I'll give you a rainbow.
I'll give you a rainbow. Yeah. So but I always feel like, and this is just me, I know these are fake characters. I know this isn't real, but it sort of speaks to how oblivious the people were who wrote the Bible, right? Because they only wanted big, powerful figures. That was the whole idea of the Bible. But if this was real characters, it almost feels as if Satan is the character that's the good guy who just sneaks in and is always trying to be honest, respectful, and self-aware enough to not try to alert the tyrant of what his agenda is, but to demonstrate how a being should be. So in the Garden of Evil, what's he doing? He's telling Adam and Eve the truth, and he's expressing that with no weird conditions that's whatsoever. He's saying, listen, if you eat this, you're going to have this happen to you. God's not telling you that, but this is what you need to do in order to like be on this path. And you should eat this. You have a right to do it. Like your life currently doesn't have a purpose. Going up to heaven and showcasing that I, as the leader of hell, can be invited to heaven and bet on people's lives. And I can put this in a framework where it makes me seem like the bad guy in the book. But honestly, you should be thinking like, who is God's bedfellows if he can invite people from hell and wages on his followers?
Well, that, you got to remember that Satan was an angel.
Mm-hmm.
He started off as an angel.
Was just being really pretty. And God was like, you're not as pretty as me. And I was like, is that literally why I'm being sent to hell? Yes. I'm like, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm just a pretty angel. Like, did I kill anybody? No, I kill people. It's like, okay. All right. So I'm just a pretty guy. Yeah. You thought you were as pretty as me, but no one's as pretty as me. I'm God. It's like, fair enough. Fair enough. That's worth internal damnation as the main figurehead of hell. But the interaction he had with Jesus on that mound, every single time devil shows up, it's always like, hey, I'm here to respect your time. Here's the situation. I'll tell you it honestly. And if you say no, I'll accept that and move away. Well, if you swap those personalities and you just had a God that was like willing to be honest, show up and not be like, oh, there's a burning bush. That must be God. Oh, there's a dove on my shoulder. That might just be God. No, devil will show up and be like, hey, hi, how are you? I'm the devil. Let me explain to you what's going on here. Like if God could just do that and just say, hey, I'm God. By the way, you're born. I'm expressing myself to you so we can start this early. Here's a relationship I want to have with you. I'll check in with you every 10 years or something like that. It would be nice to have like that because God had intervened in other people's lives before, yet for whatever reason, he stopped now. And why should we hold ourselves to the same standard of belief for people who had the direct interventionist God in their lives? To just hold us to a different, to hold us to the same standard with much lower evidence just seems inherently unfair and bully-like. And
Always that
really bothers
me. And the whole thing about hell anyway is like, God loves you, but he'll send you to hell if you don't accept his son as God and savior, basically. It's love with a gun to your head.
Yeah.
It's an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
You are worth nothing, you know, but I will take care of you. And, you know, if you worship me, it's like the epitome of abuse.
And it's never just accept God, right? It's now that you accept God, now you have to pay me 10% of your paycheck and you have to stop having sex in this particular way. And you have to dress this certain way and you have to show up at church at these particular times. And if we ask you to do something, you have to be a soldier of the truth. You have to listen to this guy who speaks to God and trust whatever he says and edicts that he passes down. There's a lot more to it than just accept Jesus, because anyone can say that, as they would say, but it's a lifestyle change that is.
Well, that brings us back to Pascal's wager that they use so often.
Okay, go.
You should believe in God anyway, because if you don't believe, you could lose everything. If you do believe, even if it's wrong, you haven't lost anything, but if it's right, you know, you gain everything in the world. You haven't lost anything if it's wrong. And the thing about it is, you know, I forget where I'm going now, but that you have to, if you accept the wager and God's not real, you have lost things. You've lost the time, the money, the self-respect if you don't believe, but you just accept it because of the wager. You lose your self-respect and you put yourself under the control of preachers.
Right.
And people don't realize that part.
My sister is a Muslim and she prays 5 times a day. And I asked her, wouldn't you like to get that time back? And she's like, I only pray 5 times a day. And I'm like, yeah, but like how much time is that? It's like 5 minutes. She's like, no, it's about like 10 minutes each day. And I'm like, that's an hour every day. So like 7 hours a week. Like you could learn to play instruments in that time, game,
get new hobbies, hang out with friends, make new food. Like there's so much. At the end of a year, we're talking about, oh my gosh, thousands of hours. Like that's a lot of time. That's a lot of time. And I would say, you know, if I was ever on my deathbed, I would say, man, I'd love to get those hundreds of thousands of hours back rather than just being with my eyes closed, forehead to the ground, appeasing the other people who are praying around me that their God is true, right? And using that time more in my interest, because who am I satisfying when I do this and I pray?
And
who
multiply,
am I satisfying when I'm doing that? Like
multiply all of that by the members of your family if you're the household head, mm-hmm. you know, and you make everybody do it.
Right. It's sort of like having a commute to work and you're not going anywhere. You're just getting in your car and you're just driving in one big circle around town and you're just doing this. You're like, where did you go today? In one big circle. It's like, why would you do that? Why would you put the miles on your car? You just sit there like, what's the point? It's like, don't tell them, this is my lifestyle. It's like, you're putting carbon in the air. What are you doing? Like, just do something.
No, I'll get my reward after I die. Yeah, that's literally it, you know?
Yeah, you're putting pennies in what you think is in a piggy
perfect
bank.
Ponzi scheme. You never have to pay off.
Mm. But I also have another friend of mine who is a Muslim who was a scientist, a colleague of mine, and he said that he prays to keep his family safe. And there's a dynamic to the two. So you talked about Pascal's wager. The reason why he was an atheist, but when he's in his country, and I don't want to explicitly say which one, but it was dominated by Islam. He would pray to in front of other people at these community areas where you pray, just so that everybody knew he was Muslim. Because if he didn't, that would be a problem for the safety of his family.
Yeah, peer pressure.
And it's when we say peer pressure in America, we think, oh, she's going to call him fat. It's like, no, these people are going to come to my house and kill my family if they don't think that I'm with this because I'm
societal pressure.
Yeah, there's a threat of
intimidation.
My family. Yes, intimidation. It's a true threat. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't. And so when he got another job so he can continue to support his family, but it was near an area that he would have to move back overseas, I felt bad for him. And he felt bad too, because he would have to continue the charade of maintaining this belief. And who's to say he wasn't the only one? Like, he would pray so hard that he would have a little ring on his head, right? And it was that indication that he was praying that other people would look for and use as a judgment. And anyone who didn't have that ring on their head would be suspect in their particular social circles. That's telltale sign of how evil it can be, you know? And the bullying that can extend to not just the leader of the bullies, but the followers of the bullies and how they bully each other. That's how a system like that works. All right. So I don't consider this bullying, Larry, but have you ever been told bless you?
Hey, nice segue.
Have you ever been told bless
you? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely do.
Talk to me about it.
Well, it's like every time I go into pretty much every time I do a restaurant, especially new restaurants, because I know restaurants that I go to that it doesn't happen. But, you know, the waitress will say bless you, and then the cashier will say bless you. You know, have a blessed day. It's not like bless you for a sneeze.
Right.
This is, you know, have a blessed day type of thing. But you just let it slide. I mean, because, you know, it's, you know, that's how they express themselves.
What? Now, as I listen, I follow all the atheist stereotypes. I'm on all the atheist Reddits. That's unacceptable. That never happens. Whenever an atheist is told bless you, they immediately start.
Well, I certainly feel like I should say something.
Explanation
but,
dialogue where they break down the person's belief and makes them feel like an idiot. Why aren't you doing the thing you're supposed to do? Where's your atheist card? Let me cut a corner off of
it. That is not what you're supposed to do. But everybody has their own mores that they follow, but that's not one of mine. I think that there are much better hills to die on.
I've actually been in a conversation with believers who are talking amongst themselves who assumed I was a believer too. And they're like, and what's the deal with atheists always getting angry with people saying bless you and stuff like that? And I just calmly said, well, I'm an atheist and I have no problem with people saying bless you. And that stopped the entire conversation because I don't think those people ever saw an atheist to begin with. And I think, one, it's important to let people know you're an atheist. for that reason. But two, when people say bless you, it's more of a contextual environment of self-expression, right? So right. Like if I'm in Rome, and let's say I'm maybe a bit back at war in time, and they say, the gods be with you. I'm fine with that because they believe in multiple gods. If I'm in India and they have a what do they say? Salamat Pagi. There's like It's more of a godly way of saying good morning. And there's definitely, you know, similar, like a salam for peace be unto you. There's people are just wishing you goodwill. That's it.
Yeah. And what gets me is you can, if you are the one atheist who has takes exception to it, the waitress or whatever will think that there's only one atheist that she met that day when she might have met 20. He said, I met a real jerk today. He was an atheist.
Right.
And there you are. You know, she could have been meeting him all day long without knowing it.
Right. And it's only the one that made an upset fuss about it that starts the stereotype.
Yeah.
So maybe a better response would be, hey, I'm an atheist, but bless you too. That'd be a nice way of saying it.
I'll have to try that.
I'll have to think about that. That might be a worthwhile never. My main thing though, and here's where I draw the line. Someone can wish me bless you. I have no problem with that. The problem I have is when someone starts to force me to bless their God. And when they do so, it's examples of them putting God bless America on my license plate. And I'm thinking this is a state issue.
Or money.
License plate. Don't put it on my money. Take it off my money, ideally. Don't put it on my license plate. Don't make me sign up. Don't have like when I'm doing like a driver's exam or something like that. Make the section, what's your religion?
Don't bother me on Saturday by coming to my door. Don't hand me pamphlets when I'm walking down the street.
Don't leave stuff in my doorway about how Jesus is going to save me and stuff like that. Like, don't not pay taxes if you're going to start taking up land in our area. Like, when I see, like, land being excavated, and it's not a home or a business, but rather another church, and I can look down that same street and see two other churches just on separate blocks from each other, and I know this is another tax-free building. I know there can't be another school here because the church isn't paying property taxes. The school is going to be underfunded. That sucks. I want to have a world where I'm not forced to worship your God, because any Christian wouldn't want to be forced to worship Allah. Any Muslim wouldn't want to be forced to worship Jehovah. So why are we mandating these expressions in a governance sense, like on our government issued stuff, money, license plate, in some cases, your work titles, in other cases, like when you try to apply for things, your religion shows up. We talked last week about court cases where you can't even raise your kids, or the fact that you could be non-believer could be used against you in terms of custody cases. Like, why is that a factor? Like, if it being governed by a truly objective party, it shouldn't matter what my religious connotation is.
Other things that courts do is they, like, if you're brought in for public alcoholism, they may send you to AA, which is a religious based habit breaking association.
Right.
They'll also send you to Christian counseling if you're having marriage troubles or something, and you know.
Larry,
you need counseling, they'll enforce it there.
Larry, I'm very upset with you because you took your motorcycle and you rammed it into the back of my car. And I know you're an atheist and you mean well, but that's damaged. I'm going to have to take you to court. So they take us both to court. And the first thing they do in court is try to swear our testimony. And they give us a Bible. They're like, do you swear on this Bible to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but truth? And you're like, I don't want the Bible. And they give it to me. It's like, I don't want the Bible either. They're like, well, no one's testifying. We're going to have to throw this court case out. And I'm like, dang it, Larry, you got me again. You got me again.
I would ask to swear on the Constitution or something I respect.
Right. So like, don't force us or either advertently or inadvertently to give dues to your God, but you as your own right can feel free to express it. That's where I draw the line. So if someone says, bless you in a cashier, as I'm checking out, not an issue. But if someone tries to etch that onto my license plate, I got a problem with that. Please don't do that. Please don't force me to worship your God. You know,
live by rules that your religion teaches.
Or swear to your God if I need to tell the truth, which is such a dumb thing to even.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, man, Larry, we're almost at the end of the show. Anyway, hopefully we had an entertaining shot talk. Thank you guys so much for all the comments. Let me throw up one more. Como você abfabulis says, great chat, guys. And he said it also at the 17 mark. Thank you so much. And guys, Data's Trading Room is saying live. He has some corrections on some of the things that we were saying about Bronze Age. That makes sense. We don't get our dates.
Absolutely. You don't have any questions?
There's one that says it wasn't an apple, guys. We appreciate the feedback. Thank you, guys. You know, you're right. It's a fruit. I'd be facetious, but you're right. There's explicit terms that we need to make sure we get them right. But in big swings, we aren't just entertainment for heaven. We are people. We have agency and we matter. Korea isn't an atheist hell. They, in fact, have a religion. It's just religions don't call it a religion because they want to seem austere.
It's a bad place. So they're going to say it's an atheist place.
They don't want to just call it another religion, but yeah, that's absolutely it. But also anyone who says atheist hell, don't take them for credit because those words don't combine together to mean anything. Yeah. God is a bully. Deal with it. And if someone says bless you, it's not a problem. If someone tries to etch bless you on your property or on your body, or use that to deny the fact that they don't have to pay taxes to contribute like a meaningful member of society, that's a problem. And that's where we draw the line. Larry, those were my final words. Go ahead and take us out.
Okay. Well, if you're having trouble leaving religious beliefs behind, and many do, you can get help from Recovering From Religion. It's recoveringfromreligion.org, and that is their website address as well. My content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject of atheism. My YouTube channel handle is @doubter5. And you can find my book on atheism called Atheism, What's It All About? On Amazon. Remember, everybody is going to some other religion's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. And we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye.